This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
My pleasure to welcome you here to the Clark Howard Show, where it's all about you and that wallet of yours. I want you to learn ideas from me so you can keep more of what you make. Coming up later, a really fantastic story in a reverse Clark rage about a boss pulling money out of his own pocket so a longtime worker could retire. I'll fill you in. It touched me. And coming up yet later, free college has been a promise by some candidates on the campaign trail. But there's actually ways people are getting free college, and they're not costing taxpayers a penny. I'm going to tell you how it works. So I want to talk right now. I should mention Clark.com, our main website, ClarkDeals.com. where we made it happen for you all through the Christmas shopping season. And here in January and all year long, the deals don't stop and we don't either. We'll hit you with the bargains, the deals as they occur at ClarkDeals.com. So there's been a lot of reaction to a survey that was done by TD Ameritrade that found that very large numbers of Americans are not intending to be able to retire ever. That people in their 40s and 50s, in huge numbers, roughly close to half, expect to work till they're deceased or until they can't get up in the morning. And there's been a lot of reaction from people who are really upset saying, get out of the way, because how am I ever going to advance if you're still working? Well, this is crazy, and it's why economics is such a strange profession. But there's a massive societal advantage, maybe not to you personally, if you haven't saved for retirement and you have to keep working. But there's a massive advantage for American society if people do keep working, because we have a big math problem. We have an aging population. And if you look at historical numbers, we don't have enough people to do all the work moving forward, which is ironic if you think about there have been many times in the past where the big problem was people couldn't find work. And today, we're in a period where it's hard for companies to find workers. And we think that's a temporary thing. And yeah, there's recessions that come and go, and then employment becomes more difficult. But the trend lines moving forward is this big need for workers. We as a country have not been able to reach a consensus on having immigrants fill jobs in the United States. So if we don't have the immigrants, we're going to have to fill them. And so people who, because they have not been able to save money and they reach age 50 and they're like, oops, I'm just going to have to work and work and work and work. That will, even though you might not like it yourself, it's great for the country. And there'll be plenty of opportunity to go around for all of us as Americans in this era of labor shortage that we're facing. You're also going to see a lot more automation come into the workplace as AI, artificial intelligence, gets steadily more sophisticated. And we deal with labor shortages in so many job categories. Jeff joins us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Jeff. Everything's great. What's going on?
Hey, just got a question about auto insurance. And this is for my personal vehicle. I'm hoping to get some advice on whether it's advisable to add rental car reimbursement insurance to my vehicle in the event that the vehicle was wrecked and needed to be in repair for a number of days.
Yes, this is absolutely essential. If there's not, like a lot of families will have an extra vehicle laying around. If that's not you, you want to have the rental car reimbursement coverage.
Okay.
Because
excellent.
What you pay in premiums for it is low enough, because the likelihood in a year that you'll need the rental car coverage is so low that the premiums are really quite reasonable. What are yours for 6 months? Do you know?
So I've got it quoted at a year, but yes, yeah, seems very reasonable at $32 for a full year per vehicle.
And I think that's benefit, very worthwhile.
Yes. Yeah, the benefit's $40 per rental day, which doesn't quite take care of, you know, the full rental cost.
Actually, you'll be surprised, because usually in the insurance replacement rental market, the insurers have negotiated rates with car rental companies that are off airport, like Enterprise,
okay,
which really got its start in that, where there will be a vehicle that will fit under your insurer's cap, that they've negotiated these volume deals. And so you should be able to get one that'll be under 40.
Right. I didn't think about that. That's, yeah, agreed. I've never looked into this before, and my wife had an accident a year ago, and we did not have it. And luckily, we were able to borrow a car, you know, temporarily, but it was challenging, because, you know, sometimes it was, you know, not as advantageous to just not have a car readily available. So,
sure.
Thanks
How
for
was
your advice.
She? How was she after that accident? Was she physically okay?
Oh, thank goodness. Both my son and my wife were fine. So, yeah, nobody hurt in the wreck, but the car was out. We were surprised they had to order parts. It was a Honda, had to order parts, I guess, from Japan, and it ended up being a full 30 days before it was completely repaired, because
wow,
there was some kind of holdup on the part. So,
wow, yeah, that's very unusual. That's an unlikely circumstance, but it shows that what did you say, $32, $42 premium? What was it a year?
$32 a year. That would have been a good investment.
Exactly. So it is a coverage that I do advise people to have. And you had that experience that sure shows why that is worth spending the money for. Nate is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Nate.
Hey, Clark. How you doing?
Great. Thank you, Nate. How can I serve you today?
Yeah, thank you. I love the show. So I'm excited to propose my question. So
thank you.
I'm 32 and I'm married, three kids. The oldest is 6. And so we sold our house in
Utah.
Do
you like yourself having three kids that young?
It depends how much sleep I get, which is usually 3 days out of the week I like myself.
Okay, so I got to tell you this. My daughter, who has her first child, she and her husband have their first baby, and she cannot believe how difficult it is with the lack of sleep. And
oh,
she
man.
Said to me last week, she said, "Dad, you always told me how hard it was going to be, but I didn't believe you."
Oh, it's so true. It's so true.
So she's, so yeah. She's, what is she? See, 6 weeks in, 7 weeks in, not getting any sleep?
Yeah, my youngest is 8 months, and she's been our easiest child, thank heavens, because going from 2 to 3 was no joke.
Well, you know, they say 1 is 1 and 2 is 10. So now you've gone past 2.
Yeah. Wow. Yep.
Well, how can I be of service to you? I'm not coming over to babysit.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that aside, then let's get into the other part, which is so yeah, married, good job, three kids. We sold our Utah house and made a good amount of money, and I invested $50,000 into a small private equity company that I actually work for, and we're trying to grow this thing. We're acquiring small businesses, and so I put some money in to have some skin in the game, and I'm left with about $25,000, and I really want to know the best way to start retirement planning, whether that's IRA or getting into real estate or what I should really do with that $25,000.
So what I would recommend is that you immediately take, so you can take six, each of you, and put in a 2019 Roth IRA, and take six for each of you and put it in a 2020 Roth IRA. So I just spent 24 of the 25.
Okay.
There's a Roth IRA. I don't know your familiarity with it, but it is the go-to to start building retirement money. And you can invest with any of a number of the ultra low cost companies. The three that have the most market share are Vanguard, Fidelity, and Charles Schwab. And any of the three are commission free with very, very low cost investment choices. And my favorite for you to do, if you opened a 2019 and a 2020, because you can do that even past year up until when you file taxes, is that you put that money in a target retirement fund for the year closest to when you're going to retire and closest to when your wife will retire.
Okay.
Or retirement, typical retirement age for each of you.
Okay. I talked to a buddy who works at Vanguard, and he walked me through the best account for that. The following question is, how much monthly should I be contributing? Because they'll be maxed out, but then once they're not maxed out, and I'm done with the $24,000.
You can't do anything again. So you can either just pop all that money in, or you can pop in the 2019 contribution in one check for each of you. And then for 2020, contribute $500 a month automatically.
Okay.
And then if you do that, and you keep doing that going forward in 21 and 22 and on like that, you're doing a classic investment method called dollar cost averaging that helps you ride out downs in the market so you don't panic when there's a stock market decline. And you just keep going where you build that habit of putting in the 500 every month.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Sure. And how many more kids? How many more kids are you going to have, Nate?
Well, the plan was four, but honestly, I think we're done at three.
I have three. Producer Joel has three, and Kim is screwing up all the numbers. She has zero. And she likes it that way.
She should get on that.
No, oh no. Do you want to speak for yourself, Kim? She's just shaking her head violently. No kids.
So. Learn from us, I guess.
Right. That's her choice. Today's Clark Rageous moment is actually a reverse rage. One of those things about our fellow humans that touched my heart. So it's the story of Albert and Rudy. So Rudy owns an auto repair shop. And he loves his employees. And he had an employee named Albert. Albert, pushing 70, was really starting to have a lot of trouble physically doing the very physical labor involved in the auto shop. And as Rudy said about Albert, I could tell his age and the physicality of the job were starting to take a toll. And so he wanted to know why he was still working, because he could see he was really struggling to work. And Albert said that he didn't have enough money to pay off his mortgage. And when he had the mortgage paid off, he was going to retire. And so just something he told Rudy and didn't really think about it. And then Albert, all of a sudden, finds out that his boss, Rudy, the owner of the shop, had written a check and paid off the balance of his mortgage and said, go be with your family. Go enjoy your life. I mean, how great is that? So now we've got Albert now owns his three-bedroom home in Texas, free and clear. And he does it just because the generosity of his boss. I mean, what goodness resides in so many of us? We only hear often in the news about the bad that goes on. But there's so many people who have a kind, generous heart. And I think that's wonderful. Joel, I think we have time for an Ask Clark here.
Yep, we certainly do, Clark.
This is where you post at clark.com/ask. And you have a question for me.
Yeah, Thomas wrote in. He says, what is the best way to go about getting a will made, Clark?
Thomas, it depends on your situation. If you have a really simple situation, no complicated blended family stuff, you're not rolling in money, you can do your own will pretty easily using the software WillMaker. It's a very popular software kit. One of the places you can get it is at nolo.com, N-O-L-O.com, or you could go to LegalZoom and get their help preparing a will. It's just two examples of very popular places for self-help. On the other hand, if you own your own business, you have money, you have a complicated personal life, go to a lawyer. And if you have money, have complication, have blended family, own your own business, anything like that, you want a lawyer who specializes in wills, estates, and trusts. This is what they do every day, and that's who you want to hire. It's my pleasure to welcome you here to the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you learning ways to keep more of what you make. Clark.com is our main website. ClarkDeals.com is where you go to save money each and every day. So think how many questions I get about college. Doing a 529 plan, borrowing money for college, paying back loans, whatever. And so we have an affordability problem in the United States. But you probably have heard these stories recently about these two colleges in Kentucky that offer free college with no strings attached. And it's usually, you know, a college has a lot of free rides. It's typically because of the money they have in endowment. These schools are small. I'll probably mispronounce Berea College and Alice Lloyd College. Charge their students zero for tuition. My daughter goes to a college called Occidental College, where people pay, the admissions are what's called blind admissions. They don't know if someone has the financial means to go to the school. They just admit the best 550 freshmen each year at her college. And then after the people have been offered admission, they then have a score that's issued for each child or each potential incoming freshman. I don't think freshmen like to be referred to as child. Students. That a three-digit score is issued, and that three-digit score determines whether you pay nothing or full freight to go to the college. And they do it with money from the endowment is how they do that there. The idea is they don't want people taking out student loan debt. Well, there's another thing going on in the country that I talked about when it was first an idea, but it's something that is growing. Income sharing agreements, known now simply as ISAs, that when I first talked about ISAs, were available at only a couple of schools as an experiment. Now there are roughly 100 colleges that offer ISAs. And what they are is where you graduate from college with no student loan debt at all, but whoever invests in your education, you pay them back with a share of your income going forward, and you typically pay for 10 years. So, you know, you get out of school, you don't know what kind of money you're going to earn. With the income sharing agreement, there's a percent of your income, and I'm talking generic terms because the ISAs are still young enough that they vary a lot in how they work. But you take out the ISA, and then the investor in it gets paid back so much every month while you're working for that typically 10-year period. So ISAs are not just like an IRA where you just can go do it anywhere. It has to be at a participating college, of which, again, there are around 100 of them now. But the idea is, in a lot of families, it's not possible economically to save for college. It's just not going to happen. And so then a student is left with the choice of not going to college or going to a very affordable college. My preference, I love for people to go to community college, at least for the first couple of years, cut the cost of college by roughly half for a four-year degree. But this is a whole different idea where you go to one of these schools that participates in an income sharing agreement, and then you graduate with $0 of student loan debt. So there's no, to my knowledge, no trade association yet. There's no standardized list of schools that offer ISAs. It will require an industrious high school senior to look around for ISA programs if the goal is to have the ability to go to a private college and go to one where you're not going to be buried in student loan debt when you're done. Clyde's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Clyde.
How you doing, Clark?
Great, thank you. So that's a good segue to what you want to talk about, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit painful. My son did not choose a free college, but he's looking to go to a flight academy here in Florida. And the baseline, I guess, is that, you know, he's 19 years old, he has a part-time job, makes about $20,000 a year, he has two credit cards, and we also have $25,000 in 529 money. As a co-signer, if that's, you know, that's probably the way we'll go, myself, I have a 780 credit score. And we're looking to borrow about $72,000. The program is 2 years, and the good part, if you will, is upon graduation, the regional airlines are paying $60,000 in a signing bonus. And then giving another $10,000 after 1 year of service. His first year salary is expected to be a little over $40,000.
Yeah, there's been a massive shift in the entry point income that a pilot now earns with, of course, the commuters and the majors. And I don't know if you know the recent history, but it used to be that if you started as a first officer with a commuter airline for the majors, you started at about $12,000 a year with no assistance for student loans. But the labor shortage for pilots is so extreme here in the United States and around the world that the signing bonus thing has made a huge difference.
Yeah, it's very lucrative. It's awesome. Yeah, so the Flight Academy is partnering with a bank that has an option for a private student loan.
Yeah.
They're offering a 5.4 to 11.7, you know, depending on the credit score. 6 months.
But you're on the hook for that. They're not going to just let your son sign a loan, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, no prepay penalties. First payment is due 6 months after graduation. The cool thing seems to be that there's a co-sign and release clause that you know, after he makes 48 monthly payments on time, that, you know, if he qualifies, we can drop the cosigner.
Well, what you would do in that case, is the first 48 payments you make.
Absolutely.
So there's no question those payments have been made on time. And then you're relieved from co-signing responsibility. Now, it does violate my formula, because you're talking about in perfect conditions, you're going to end up with him having, is it $72,000 in student loan debt?
Correct.
Yeah, and so you never want to borrow more than what he's likely to earn the first year on the job. The reason you would violate that is that the airline industry, being a seniority-driven business, his income will rise steadily and continually through his career till he's been with the airlines for 20 years, let's say.
Yeah, absolutely. He plans to go to the majors as well.
Now, there is one other alternative that I'd like you to see if it applies in your state or part of a multi-state compact. There are now state schools, you know, state-supported schools that offer aviation programs, often subsidized by the airlines in some way because they need pilots so badly and mechanics so badly. Have you looked to see if there is a state-supported school?
Absolutely. There's numerous ones, much more expensive, two-factor.
For a state, you're in Florida, part of the Florida State University system?
Oh, I'm sorry. So there's a Daytona school. It's very, very large. Aviation school, very expensive as well.
No, I'm talking about one subsidized by the taxpayers of your state.
No, I don't know of that. I haven't checked into that. I did not know that.
I would look. They aren't out there saying, hey, come look at us. So you got to look.
Okay.
And there's also a number of multi-state compacts that if a state school in one state doesn't offer a particular major or degree, that your son may be able to go in a nearby state that offers a subsidized pilot training program.
Well, that's great.
It could be a lot cheaper than a traditional private flight school program.
I definitely look into that.
And then your son would graduate with a bachelor's degree and a pilot's license, both.
Yeah, the first step is regionals. He doesn't need a bachelor's degree, but the end goal is bachelor's degree for the majors.
So that's why these state programs, where they're part of the state university systems, encompass both the degree and the pilot's license.
Well, that's great.
So
definitely need to look into that.
Hopefully you can find something like that. I'm just not aware if in the state of Florida there is a state university program. But again, then that's where the multi-state compacts come in. And I don't know if that's a term you're familiar with. But
I'm not. I'll have to look into that.
But anyway, a state that may not be able to afford or have a particular major works out a deal with another state that has that major, where a child who normally would be out of state is considered to be in state in that particular course of study. Michael is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Clark, how are you?
Great, thank you. How can I be of help?
Okay, so I've gotten quite a few recall notices over the years. I have a 2011 Fusion, and I finally decided to do something about it, and I called and set up an appointment to have them fixed. And then, so I got to thinking about it, and I wanted to see exactly how many active recalls I had. So I got online and I did a quick Google search, and I looked up the NHTSA website.
Right.
And it said I had 3 active recalls. And so I was reading through the notices and everything, and I noticed that there was a reimbursement period. I can't remember who pays who or whatever, but only one of them said that it was still active and the other two had already expired. So my question is am I financially responsible for those other 2 recalls now because the reimbursement period is over?
So, good question. All right. So, as a general rule, the statute of limitations for a recall is 8 years from when you originally bought the vehicle. So did you buy the 2011 in 2011, or were you a subsequent owner?
No, I got it in 14 as a second owner.
Okay, so you're well within the 8 years. So the exception to that would be if the Fed specifically agreed that there would be a time limit for you to make a claim. If there's a stated time limit, that, in my understanding, would be the superior thing or inferior for you. But if there's not a stated time limit, then it's 8. So it's okay. 22.
Okay, thank you.
So if there is one, go to the dealer in good faith to have the one recall done that you know you're still eligible for.
Mm-hmm.
And ask them, what about these other two? So at least get
that
one
done. Okay, I'll be sure to do that. I will definitely do that. It's the Takata airbag thing, so.
Oh.
Yeah.
That you've got to take care of, because the Takata airbag thing is extremely dangerous.
Oh, yeah. Sounds like it.
So I hope that they can get that done in a timely manner. You know, there was a long period of time that manufacturers were saying, bad news, this airbag thing doesn't work. But worse news, we have no replacements, but we're just telling you it doesn't work. It's time for Clark.com/ask. That's when you go post a question and we answer them multiple ways. One, if you check a box, well, you may well end up with me on the show answering your question. Or you may get a chance to talk with a member of Team Clark, a free service of our show since 1993, where we provide free off-the-air advice. Or producer Joel could ask your question for you, and that's what you're going to do right now.
That's right. We got one from Tom. He says, how can I get around a 3% upcharge a local car dealer wants to charge on credit card transactions? They've got a tiny sign about the size of a Post-it note next to the checkout counter letting you know about the fee. If I pay cash, debit, or check, there's no fee, but it's hard to have that extra cash on hand if the expenses are more than I had planned. Plus, the credit card can allow me to dispute the charge if there's a problem. What do you think, Clark?
Yeah, I'm seeing this not a lot, but more and more, where retailers are charging the 3% surcharge. And so depending on the circumstance, I have reward cards, so I either pay the 3% extra or I pay cash. In a case where you're worried about needing to dispute or you're short of money right then, you're right to pay the 3% extra and just use the credit card. But it is, you got to understand, for the car dealer and for anybody who accepts credit cards, the Visa MasterCard cartel is charging such massive fees to merchants that more and more merchants are saying, let's let the customer decide. If they want to use that card, they pay this. If they don't, they're going to get a better deal, a better price by not using that plastic.
All right, Clark, and Jenny wrote in. She says, what about reverse mortgages? What are the pros and cons and that I should be considering when I'm thinking about them?
Well, if you watch the TV ads, they're just the greatest thing ever for you to take out a reverse mortgage. Your house pays you every month. So that's the pitch. And that's the idea. The problem is that reverse mortgages come with massive fees up front. And it's been a big problem around the country that people who do reverse mortgages end up being foreclosed on. So the easy walk in a park that's promised is not really true. But if you are in a position where you're house rich and cash poor, you don't have enough money to live your life, there's nobody you want to inherit that house from you, shopping around and doing a reverse mortgage is a potential alternative. You should go through financial counseling to make sure that it looks like the right choice for you. Shop the market and then do the reverse mortgage, but only as a last option, definitely not a first one. And it's when you're tapped out and you need the income. You're listening to the Clark Howard Show. Thanks for joining us today. The Clark Howard Show is produced by Kim Drobes, Joel Larsgaard, Deborah Reese, and Jim Ayers. And remember, 24 hours a day, we're there to serve you at Clark.com and ClarkDeals.com.